Chapter 25. Advice for Therapists of People with BPD. In this chapter, recognizing early signs of BPD, letting go of your ego and focusing on your client, setting serious limits and sticking to them, taking care of yourself. The complexity of borderline personality disorder, BPD, can send shivers down the spines of mental health therapists. Clients with BPD present with multiple issues, including impulsive behaviors, relationship problems, substance abuse, emotional dysregulation, and a high risk of suicide. In fact, 10% of people with BPD eventually do commit suicide. The treating mental health professional feels a great deal of anguish and pain when a client's life ends through suicide. No wonder many therapists feel unprepared to meet the challenges of a person with BPD. Other therapists unknowingly accept people with BPD into their practices and become enmeshed in an entangled, complex relationship that eventually spins out of control. Thus, they may find themselves providing unusual amounts of help, giving special considerations, or feeling angry and annoyed with their BPD patients without even knowing why. At the same time, treating people with BPD can be uniquely rewarding. Changes may come more slowly than they do in other cases, and obstacles may seem more daunting. But hanging in there and giving someone with BPD the tools and skills she needs for a better life gives you, the therapist, an opportunity to use all your talents and training. And nothing is more satisfying than seeing someone's life turn around with your help. In this chapter, we give you some guidelines for recognizing BPD in your patients early. We discuss how to be in touch with your own thoughts and feelings, as well as how to keep them from interfering with the therapy you're doing. We also make note of the importance of setting reasonable limits with all your patients, including those with BPD. Finally, we recommend various ways of taking care of yourself. Therapists need to make sure they meet their own needs in various ways if they hope to have the energy and reserves they need to take care of challenging patients. Detecting BPD in the early stages of therapy. The sooner you know that a new patient has BPD, the more likely you are to be able to manage the therapeutic complexities involved. However, many patients with BPD work hard to keep their therapists in the dark about their condition. Reasons for this behavior vary from person to person, but in part, BPD patients may fear rejection from you, their new therapist. This fear isn't entirely groundless, because some therapists prefer not to work with patients with BPD. Thus, some BPD patients report having been rejected by several therapists in the past. Remember, if you don't feel comfortable treating BPD, try to avoid starting a therapeutic process before making a referral. Doing so can cause unnecessary harm to your client by exacerbating abandonment concerns. Usually, a phone interview or an agreement to 1 to 3 evaluation sessions prior to starting therapy can keep you from taking on someone you shouldn't. Our reason for recommending that you detect BPD early in therapy has less to do with needing or wanting to avoid working with BPD patients, and more to do with maximizing your awareness of what may be tricky hot buttons for your patient. By hot buttons, we mean core issues, such as the following: fears of abandonment, self-esteem problems, problems with identity, feelings of emptiness, need for constant stimulation, substance abuse issues, problems with boundaries, rage, feelings of entitlement, dysregulated emotions, tendencies to engage in self-harm, relationship struggles, dissociation. See Chapter 3 for more details about BPD symptoms. When you're aware that your BPD patients may have exquisite sensitivity to any of these issues, you can follow a more careful course in your therapeutic dialogues with them. Knowing what to avoid and what to address in your dialogues with BPD patients helps prevent ruptures in the therapeutic process. We suggest that you consider the possibility that clients may have BPD when they display the following behaviors, especially in the first few sessions. Report that their past therapist didn't understand them. Give you a long list of previous inadequate therapists. Say their problems are too great to be solvable. Miss, cancel, or change appointments, especially at the last minute. Desire special considerations, such as after-hours appointments or forgiveness on bills. Try to make sessions run over the time allocation. Idealize you, the new therapist, or a previous therapist, including subtle or blatant seductive behaviors. Treat you, the new therapist, as a special friend, or discuss a previous therapist in those terms. Appear overly sensitive to your moods or state of health. Ask seemingly innocent questions about your family. Try to make connections outside of therapy, such as bumping into you at stores or local events. Reveal knowledge about you that isn't widely known. Report past suicidal behaviors and threats. Report past self-harming behaviors, such as cutting. Obviously, the preceding bullets don't represent a diagnostic checklist for BPD. We assume you already know the basics of BPD diagnoses. But if you're unsure about the diagnosis of an especially complex case, seek professional supervision and consultation. You may even want to refer the client to a psychologist with expertise in assessment for a complete psychological evaluation before proceeding with treatment. Warning. In addition to looking for these signs in your patients, you need to tune into your own feelings. You may find yourself starting to reveal personal information without even knowing why. Or you may feel attracted to, or simply quite warm, towards some clients with BPD symptoms. You may find yourself forgiving last-second cancellations and special requests. You need to be aware of your thoughts and feelings, especially those that are similar to the ones we mention here. Of course, you care about your clients, but you have to be careful when you feel something out of the ordinary. If you don't keep a check on your feelings, you could easily become ensnared in an inappropriate relationship. Tip: working as a mental health therapist can be a lonely job, especially when you have a private practice. Because of legal and ethical reasons, you can't go home and tell your family about your day. You have to keep your daily experiences to yourself, which can be a difficult task at times. We recommend that all mental health practitioners have either peer supervision groups with colleagues or regular consultations with other professionals. Doing so is a major part of maintaining good practice, but it's especially crucial when you're working with clients with BPD. Maintaining objectivity. We, like most mental health therapists, have come across clients who ask for help and then, in the same breath, say that they're helpless. People with BPD often present contradictions like this one. The first few sessions may sound something like the following. Save me. You can't. Help me. I'm helpless. I can trust you more than anyone in the world. I won't tell you how I feel. Give me tools, and I'll break them. Give me support, and I'll find ways to test you. Don't ever leave me. I hate you. Be nice to me. I'll destroy you. You can't help me. You're my only chance. I'll do anything for you. I'm going to kill myself. Do any of these scenarios feel familiar? Do you have a sick feeling in the pit of your stomach? We understand. Being a therapist for someone with BPD is a very difficult task. However, if you fear dealing with BPD issues like these, you need to get therapy and/or supervision, because avoiding having any BPD patients in your practice is pretty tough. After all, A variety of studies have estimated that around 10% of all outpatients have BPD, and the reality is that 25% or so of therapists eventually lose one or more patients to suicide. That percentage is a little higher for psychologists, and even higher for psychiatrists, who usually see more patients. If these statistics create overwhelming fear, you may want to consider another occupation. However, assuming that you're interested in treating even the difficult patients with BPD, after all, you're listening to this book, you need to consider a few issues. First of all, 90% of all people with BPD don't commit suicide. Second, therapy does help people with BPD, and so does the passage of time. Third, the outcome of any client, with or without a diagnosis of BPD, ultimately has as much to do with a client's efforts as those of the therapist. The next two sections may help you hold on to the objectivity that is so critical when you're dealing with challenging clients. Keeping your therapist ego on the shelf. Therapists, by and large, love to help people, which is a major reason why they're therapists. Providing people with the care, support, and therapeutic guidance they need to reduce their distress and helping to make their lives fuller and more meaningful are very rewarding parts of the job. However, providing psychotherapy to people can't be about enhancing your own ego. Yes, you want to feel good about what you do, and yes, you probably feel better about yourself when your hard work pays off with a client. But you can't measure your own worthiness by how each individual client does in therapy. Remember, psychotherapy is a two-way street. As a therapist, you can only set the optimal conditions for enhancing the likelihood of clients making useful changes in their lives. When someone doesn't go along with your plan, you need to know that you're not a bad therapist or an unworthy human being. In other words, if you allow your own ego to become intertwined in the relationships you have with your clients who have BPD, you'll likely lose the objectivity you need to be an effective therapist. By letting your personal feelings take over, you may find yourself allowing boundaries to blur as you feel increasingly frustrated, annoyed, and upset with your challenging client. If you let your feelings override your objective thoughts, you may end up doing the very thing your BPD clients fear the most, but expect at the same time, abruptly abandoning them because of your own emotional struggle. Alternatively, you may allow yourself to become enmeshed in an inappropriate, unethical relationship that can range from becoming close friends to building a sexual liaison. Either relationship ultimately proves harmful to any client, especially clients with BPD. If you doubt the truth of this statement, ask a few of your colleagues who have experience treating serious personality disorders about their thoughts on the issue. In addition to keeping your ego and feelings in check, you also need to fully understand what's reasonable to expect from a therapeutic relationship if you want to be an effective therapist. We discuss this topic in the next section. Keeping therapist expectations within bounds. Every therapist needs to understand what to expect from a career as a mental health professional. Some of the advantages you can expect from such a career include reasonably good pay, some degree of autonomy over your work schedule, respect in the community, intellectual stimulation, and a variety of interesting colleagues to work with. More important than these, however, is the great satisfaction that therapists usually report feeling after having played a role in improving their clients' lives. Remember, on the other hand, what you can't expect from this career is nurturance, support, friendship, or great gratitude from your clients. Many clients may feel appreciative, yet they don't often express that emotion fully. Some clients may leave after a couple of sessions and give you no feedback at all. For other clients, you may plant seeds that won't germinate until years after your work is over. In fact, many clients may repeat your ideas back to you some weeks or months after you first offer them, attributing the notions to their own insights. A situation like this is wonderful because it means they're making progress. Understanding boundaries. Psychotherapists need boundaries, or they may lose control over some of the relationships they have with clients. Generally speaking, you want to discuss a number of issues and boundaries with new clients, as well as provide a form for them to sign that states they understand and agree to these limits. The details of these limits vary from therapist to therapist, but your list should generally include a review of the following items. Timeliness. You should set out some expectations regarding showing up on time with every new client. Of course, traffic or other unexpected delays occasionally arise, but you can deal with those issues on a case-by-case basis. Financial arrangements. You should either collect the copayments or insurance deductibles the patient owes at the time of service, or bill the patient regularly. Whichever method you choose, make sure you go over it with your new patient. Allowing bills to accumulate significantly is typically a big mistake. Cancellation or no-show policies. Therapists vary on how they decide to deal with this issue, but you need to lay out the details of your own policy at the beginning of therapy and explain that you expect your new patient to adhere to this policy. After-hours availability. This issue is especially controversial in the mental health field, and practitioners debate on how to deal with it. We have no simple answer for you, but whatever your policy is, you need to make it clear to every new client. All clients need to know what to do in the event of an emergency, so make sure your policy includes such cases. Dual relationships. Mental health professionals strongly discourage dual relationships and rarely consider them ethical. However, the issue can get quite subtle and perplexing. As a rule of thumb, you don't want to have any relationships with your clients outside therapy that include financial transactions, friendships, sexual liaisons, exchanges of other services, or favors. Self-disclosure. What therapists decide to disclose about themselves to clients, and whether they decide to disclose anything at all, is another controversial area. We encourage therapists to seek supervision and consultation with colleagues on this issue. If you do decide to judiciously disclose a few personal stories or anecdotes, make sure they're limited. Also, make sure you only tell personal stories for sound therapeutic rationales. Never do so for your own needs. Bartering. Although some professional groups consider this practice acceptable under a few circumstances, we discourage bartering, accepting items or services in return for therapy, in general. The process can quickly turn sour. Gifts. Clients often feel quite grateful to their therapists. Sometimes they want to express their gratitude with small gifts. Often, homemade goodies, cookies and such, a small box of chocolates, an inexpensive coffee cup, or a card are acceptable. However, you should be clear that you can't accept expensive gifts, no matter how well-intended they may be. In addition, therapists, or the agencies they work for, should provide each client with a consent form that discusses reasonable expectations of therapy, appropriate therapeutic goals, confidentiality issues, client rights, and professionals' obligations to their clients. Warning. Limits, rules, and boundaries may sound rather straightforward and simple on paper. However, these issues can quickly become very complex and confusing in practice. Some of your clients are bound to complicate matters at some point. People with BPD, for example, sometimes have an exquisite sense of how to thread the needle, leaving you bewildered. See the story of Linda and her therapist, Jim, in the section Dealing with Boundaries, for an example of a subtle attempt to cross boundaries. The best advice we can give you is to make sure you document all issues related to boundaries, seek continuing education and consultation, and be careful. In addition, we strongly recommend that you go to kspope.com. where you can find an extensive collection of resources about therapeutic boundaries. Dealing with boundaries. Therapists sometimes get caught in nets of negativity, or, alternatively, tugs for crossing boundaries with patients. When either of these situations happens, treatment can turn into a battle of wills instead of a helping relationship. These traps ensnare all therapists from time to time, but you can do your best to minimize them in several ways. A few guidelines for avoiding these pitfalls include the following. Don't become defensive. You may become the symbol of everything that's wrong in mental health care in your client's mind. Or you may become the equivalent to the client's mother, father, ex-partner, teacher, or some other person who caused substantial angst or disappointment. In any event, clients will criticize you, sometimes very aggressively, from time to time. You must realize that the criticism isn't about you in most cases, and when it is, you need to be open to hearing it. You may be able to learn something from your client's rampage. Defensive counterattacking on your part quickly leads to a therapeutic rupture that you may not be able to repair. Looking for something to validate. Almost any criticism has a sliver of truth in it. Focus on finding the part of the criticism you can agree with. Look for reasons why your client is behaving in self-defeating ways, whether with you or with others. Usually, a reason does exist, and that reason isn't entirely unreasonable. Reflect empathy. Even when you feel annoyed or aggravated, you can probably find something about your client or her words that you can feel empathy for. Express that empathy and understanding to your client. Ask your client for more information. Even when you feel attacked, ask for clarification. Most people calm down when you seem genuinely interested in fully understanding their concerns. Listen to your gut. If you feel uncomfortable, squeamish, pulled, or bullied, you need to slow down, back off a little, and reflect. Your feelings are trying to tell you something. Try to figure out what that something is. Don't get caught up in a rapid-fire exchange that feels out of control. Put an issue on the shelf for a while. Sometimes an issue may be so hot that your client isn't ready to hear anything you have to say. In those cases, saying something like the following is perfectly acceptable. I understand the way you're feeling right now. Would you be willing to take another look at this issue in a future session? I have a feeling we're a little stuck at the moment. Remember, therapists are human beings, and as such, they're imperfect. If you feel confused or upset, step back and ask the client for more clarification. Your guidance and responses don't have to be instantaneous. The following story about Jim, an experienced social worker, illustrates some of the boundary struggles a therapist can face with his client. Jim finds himself getting into battles with his patient, Linda. He also finds himself expressing feelings of friendship without even understanding why. He seeks help from his clinical director, who asks for an audio tape of the therapy session. Tip: sometimes, as a therapist, you may want to bring in a supervisor to help you better understand a particular client and what you can do to help that client. You can enhance this supervision by using video or audio-taped sessions. Most patients or clients agree to the taping if the only use is for clinical supervision. As the session progresses, the client soon forgets that the camera or tape recorder is even there. Here's the dialogue from Jim's recent session with Linda. Jim, the therapist. Hello, Linda. I'm glad to see you today. I heard that you were in the ER this weekend after cutting yourself. I'm glad you weren't admitted. Linda, the client. You're lucky I'm alive. No thanks to you or your stupid hospital. They made me wait 4 hours before anyone would see me. By the time I got to talk to the doc, I was so tired that I just wanted to go home and go to bed. Jim. Well, we've talked about this before, Linda. Sometimes just waiting a while until the overwhelming feelings go down can keep you safe. You don't always need to be admitted. Linda. You know what, Jim? You're just a whore for the insurance company, trying to keep costs down by turning away psych patients. Jim, that's not true, Linda. We do what's right for our patients. My obligation is to keep you safe, not to save money. Linda, don't be condescending to me. I've been around a long time. I used to be able to get a bed and a few days' rest in your hospital. Now it's full of homeless criminals. The people who really need help are sent home. Jim, now, Linda, that's not fair to me. You know I'm trying to help you. Linda, not fair. Look, I've been coming here for years, and that's the treatment I get from you? Jim, okay, Linda, can we stop here? I think we both need to step back and figure out what's going on. Linda, oh, I see. You've finally had enough of me and want to get rid of me as a client, right? Jim, no, not at all. I really like you, really. But you're not hearing me or realizing that I'm trying really hard to help you. Linda, you really like me? I'll bet you wouldn't even have a cup of coffee with me if you ran into me on the sidewalk, would you? Jim, that's not true. Of course I would. I do really care about you. Linda, well, that's reassuring. Jim's supervisor listens to this segment of the tape. He asks Jim where he thinks things first got off track. In retrospect, Jim realizes that his first mistake occurred when Linda told him that she had to wait for 4 hours and was exhausted from the ordeal. Because Jim was feeling defensive, he failed to express empathy for her plight. Then, when she called him a whore from the insurance company, he argued with her. Instead, he may have found a way to agree that insurance can be frustrating. Jim further derailed when he directly argued with his client by telling her that what she said was untrue and unfair to him. His mistake gave Linda an opening to ask whether he cared enough about her to have coffee sometime. Jim was totally flustered and, not wanting to make things worse, agreed to her vague request to consider violating boundaries. Jim and his supervisor discuss some alternative approaches, which we note at the beginning of this section. He can take to work with Linda in future sessions. The supervisor points out that these ideas may not always work, but that they will help Jim maintain appropriate boundaries. Even if Jim and Linda can't repair their therapeutic relationship, the alternative approaches Jim wants to use will send Linda a more appropriate message, which can help her in future therapy if she chooses to seek it. If they can repair their therapy relationship, all the better. Here's a partial transcript of the next session. Jim, hello, Linda. How are you doing this week? Linda, much better, Jim. How are you? Jim, good. If there's nothing pressing going on in your life that we need to deal with immediately, I'd like to propose that we talk a little about our session last week. Would that be okay with you? Linda, I'm sorry I got on your case about the ER and called you a whore. I know you care about me. Jim, well, Linda, I want to say that I got a little defensive and shouldn't have. You have every right to express your opinions, whether they're negative or positive. Linda, I like it when a man can admit mistakes, Jim. Jim, let me explain. I took a wrong turn that may have hurt our therapeutic relationship. I was feeling uncomfortable about arguing with you, so I went a bit the other way. Linda, oh, no, Jim, I can really trust you now. I know that you care about me in a special way. I'm more than just an ordinary client to you. Jim, Linda, I care about you in the same way I care about all my clients. I want to be able to help you help yourself. I'm sorry I misspoke. Linda, what do you mean, misspoke? Jim, well, when I agreed with you that I could consider having coffee if I ran into you somewhere, I wasn't thinking. In fact, doing something like that would cross a barrier that I just don't think is a good idea. Linda, what? I wasn't asking you to have an affair with me. It's just coffee, for gosh sakes. Jim, I understand that coffee sounds very innocent and trivial. I just make it a rule not to socialize in any way outside of therapy with any of my clients. I care about them, but therapy takes place in the office. Linda: Gosh, you're incredibly uptight. Jim: I know it sounds a little rigid, maybe it is, but I found it works better for me that way. Linda: So you don't really think I'm special? Is that it? Jim: Everyone's special, Linda, and so are you. Linda: That sounds like a lot of BS to me, Jim. Jim: I understand that. But do you feel you can accept what I'm saying and continue working with me? Linda: I think so, but I'll think about it and let you know. At Jim's next supervision session, his supervisor compliments him on his work. He relates that Jim kept his cool, looked for ways to agree with what Linda said without endorsing everything, and held his boundaries firmly. He tells Jim that he thinks the relationship may be close to back on track, but only time will tell. Remember, when you communicate your boundaries clearly and honestly, most clients can hear the message. If clients can't accept what you're telling them, letting go of your boundaries will only make things worse. Taking care of yourself. An important component of taking care of other people involves taking care of yourself. Too many therapists let their lives get out of balance. They worry excessively about their clients, work reprehensible hours, and disparage themselves when their clients don't improve like they think they should. For people who spend much of their lives focused on meeting the needs of other people, in other words, you, looking after themselves and meeting their own needs aren't always as easy as they may think. Here are a few suggestions we offer you, a therapist, for taking care of yourself. Seek social support. Spend time with friends and family. Take part in hobbies and outside activities. Try out some new activities, such as hiking, travel, or crafts. Exercise. You tell your clients to exercise, don't you? Well, what about you? Try a range of ideas until you find a few activities you enjoy enough to stick with them. Don't restrict yourself to a single form of exercise, such as jogging. Your body does better when you cross-train. Learn new things. Take adult education classes at a local college or university. Read new books. Of course, you read professional books and articles, but consider reading outside of your field. In addition, read for entertainment. Prioritize your health. Staying healthy takes some energy, time, and commitment. Practice self-control.